There's a demand side to the perfect storm, and there's a supply side to the perfect storm. In the United States, we have about 12.5 billion square feet of commercial office space. There's a 50% vacancy in that square footage, which equates to, I'll just say round figures, 6 billion square feet of office space that lays vacant every day.
Welcome to the Alter Group podcast on real estate. I'm your host, Tom Silva. Today, our guest is John Vividelli, founder and CEO of AgileQuest. John is an internationally recognized expert in the fields of real estate metrics, cost management, and business continuity. Previously, he was principal in the IBM Consulting Group, where he was instrumental in the development of IBM's FlexiMove workplace management system, an application that saved the company over $100 million annually. John, I want to open by asking you about a statement you made that some might find provocative, which is that we are currently witnessing in our industry a real estate perfect storm. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I look at it from two perspectives. There's a demand side to the perfect storm, and there's a supply side to the perfect storm. On the supply side, there's some interesting things going on in the marketplace right now. There's an upcoming rule change, FASB Rule 13, which really looks at how to account for real estate. And that accounting is going to change so that both owned and leased property is going to have to be reported on the balance sheet. So there won't be any more synthetic leases or leases that are off balance sheet transactions. It's all going to be put back on to the balance sheet. So that impacts for a CFO tremendously their return on asset and the return on investment of this thing called real estate.
So what is the implication of that? Does that just affect the own versus lease decision?
Real estate is often the largest balance sheet item for many companies, and it's their second largest expense. So a rule that affects the largest balance sheet item and the second largest expense has got to get the attention of senior management.
Now, the other part of the perfect storm is that out of the $3.5 trillion in commercial real estate mortgages, close to half of them are going to be coming due very quickly, correct?
There are estimates that between $1.2 to $1.4 trillion worth of commercial real estate loans are going to be coming due over the next 2 years. And the majority of those loans are not going to qualify under current loan reserve requirements. So there are owners of real estate that have loans that are going to be coming due over the next 2 years that may not have the cash to be able to renegotiate those loans and to re-up those loans under the new rules that that they have to live under.
Which is leading to the next point, which is part of the reason these buildings can't be refinanced is because they're not cash flowing, because they have vacancy. So give me a little bit more of a sense of where vacancies are playing a role in this perfect storm.
The average space vacancy in the United States is measured at around 17%, but that only tells part of the story. There's something called shadow space that many of our listeners may not be familiar with. It's office space that is paid for, but it's unused. Basically, you don't have enough people to fill up all your space. So you're paying for space and not using it, and that is estimated at somewhere between 5 and 20% additional vacancy to that 17%. So the real vacancy could be as high as 22 to 37%.
And some of this shadow space is actually functionally obsolete because the ownership cannot fund the TI, correct?
That's correct, and there's also another aspect to it, which is some of this space doesn't support the way work is done today. More collaborative, higher technology, networks, wireless networks. The space itself doesn't fit the type of work that's being done today.
So that really talks about the supply side, but give us a sense of what is happening on the demand side within the real estate industry that's giving you concern.
Well, on the demand side, let's take a look at this. We have an average unemployment of about 10%. That's the stated number, 9 to 10%. But if people have decided not to look for a job anymore, they've been out of work so long, they've opted out of looking for a job, that adds another 7% to the unemployment, which puts the unemployment actually at around 17%. So as people look at the recovery and you look at what that recovery might look like from a standpoint of jobs, there are some people that look at this and go, there's so many increases in efficiency. People have learned, organizations have learned how to get their jobs done with less people, get their tasks done with less people.
So you're suggesting that this could be a jobless recovery. In addition to that, John, have we also seen the result of all of the alternate officing patterns?
Just recently, President Obama and his Council of Economic Advisors released a report, and they recognized this trend called workplace flexibility, frankly, as if it's something new, but it really isn't. And the president strongly supports this move to a more flexible workplace and a flexible workforce. So what does this mean for real estate? Here's the crux. Technology allows mobility. We all have laptops, cell phones, PDAs. We have networks that allow us to be able to get our job done pretty much wherever we want. And that mobility is what's underneath this thing called office space vacancy. And I wanted to talk about this office space vacancy for a second. The average actual occupancy of office space between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, is between 50 and 70%. So we talked about these numbers, the quote-unquote, the traditional office vacancy, and we use numbers of around 22% or 37%, depending on how you want to look at it. There's another factor, and that factor is that the people aren't there. They've opted out of the office, and that has created an office-based vacancy of somewhere between 50 and 70% in the United States. It's interesting, if a CFO or a CEO that's listening to this, if you would do so, go out to your floor plates and walk through one of your buildings. Pick 10 o'clock in the morning when you think a lot of people are going to be there, maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and count about 40 desks. I guarantee you that you will not see more than 20 desks that have anybody in them.
So give me a sense, John, of the scale of this. There are 5 million commercial buildings in the United States. Out of that, how many square feet do you think that represents in terms of vacancy?
In the United States, we have about 12.5 billion square feet of commercial office space. And if these numbers are correct with respect to the demand, that's about, there's a 50% vacancy in that square footage, which equates to, I'll just say round figures, 6 billion square feet of office space that lays vacant every day.
And let's put that into a hard cost number.
I used a number, say $60 allocated cost per square foot for that real estate is about $360 billion that corporate America pays to landlords that's empty, that they don't need. That the energy that's wasted because of that lack of use is about 1.5 quads of energy. That's 10 to the 15th. It's a big number. And the carbon that's released is about 40 million metric tons of carbon that's released unnecessarily. So from a sustainability standpoint, as well as a cost-saving standpoint, the question is, can we afford to have this kind of an inefficiency in the marketplace?
So, John, the perfect storm is a slightly apocalyptic term, and what I want to do is focus on solutions. And I know you've been working for many years to try and help corporations address these various points. So give us a sense of what they can do.
Great question. So what the heck am I supposed to do as a company given this real estate perfect storm? Oversupply, decreased demand. Let's take a look at another aspect of the economy. There are economists that are saying that we are actually now in a recovery. We're in a solid recovery. And that the interest rates are going to start to rise along with that broader U.S. recovery. And with a Fed money rate at 0%, it's probably not a prediction that's too hard to make, given that interest rates really can only go one place, and that's up. If you ascribe to this train of thought, then you might agree with some of the recommendations that economists are making to companies. And those are things like borrow money now at fixed rates so that you can fix costs over the long term. Buy inflation-adjusted assets. Buy more equipment for efficiencies. Fix those costs as long as you can to avoid the upcoming price increases. And one might be tempted, as so many are these days, that you look at real estate and you can see that dollars per square foot, rents are down, and so companies are being advised to do things like, well, lock into your rate now for a long time, or your current rate, or move up to newer, nicer properties, and that price is about the same as what you're paying now for maybe Class B office space. But I want to caution CFOs and CEOs of companies. It's buyer beware at this point. You really need to look under this a little bit more. And I suggest that that metric, that old metric of dollars per square foot, is absolutely the wrong measurement that people should be using when evaluating a real estate acquisition or a real estate lease at this point. Many real estate professionals are advocating this, and I frankly disagree. I think there's another metric that people ought to be looking at, and that's how much space do I actually use? That's the metric. Actual utilization percentage is a metric that people ought to be looking at rather than how much each square foot costs, because it tells you the true use of your real estate. It's when you build a budget for anything that a company does, you have a financial budget that says this is how much I'm going to spend over this coming year for whatever that aspect is. And then at the end of that period of time, you go and you look at the actual. And you always compare budget to actual to see how well you did. Commercial real estate is the only expense that most companies don't go back to and say, how much did I actually use? Mm-hmm. Thinking about this, refineries, distribution centers, manufacturing plants, every asset except commercial office space, there is a measurement that says, how much of this did I actually use? That's why I think it's so critical that you apply the same metrics, the same business logic, the same control on commercial office space as that you do for every other one of your assets, including people, because you measure them as well.
So for companies that have been using the metric of dollars per square foot since time immemorial, what new metrics have emerged that you think are more effective?
Absolutely. Well, we've talked about percent utilization, and that I mean by that actual utilization. So you could look at it and say, my space, this building is used 45% of the time actually, and you're getting that data by understanding how many people actually come to the building or don't on any given day. So that's one metric. There's another metric that is very interesting. It's used in the retail business, but I've been applying it to larger organizations that have commercial office space within a particular industry and comparing that. And that is revenue per square foot. It's, again, a traditional metric for real estate, retail real estate, but not so much in office space. But I think applying that gives a very interesting view of efficiency when you're looking at revenue per square foot and comparing that across, say, similar technology companies or, say, similar financial institutions. And looking at how efficient that CFO is, how efficient that management team is in the use of the capital that has been entrusted to them by their shareholders.
Now, John, I want to offer people a concrete example of what you're talking about, and it's one from your own background that I want to ask you about. You were at IBM during a critical time in the company's history. You were initially one of the salespeople, became a top salesperson, part of the 100% club. But later, you became principal in the consulting group. And you were involved in changing the metrics at IBM and ended up really affecting the way that they viewed real estate. Give us a sense of how that evolved.
In the late 80s and early 90s, IBM was in severe trouble. There was a lot of discussion about breaking up IBM into three separate companies. The stock price was so depressed that people were worried that the Japanese were going to come and buy IBM. In 1 year alone, we had $8 billion in losses. I know that doesn't compare with some of the losses that some companies have gone through here recently, but back then, $8 billion was real money. So many people don't know and don't understand how close IBM as a company was to becoming undone. In these tough times, though, IBM took some very interesting steps to return them to greatness. And there's a lesson here, I think, in these tough times. That's when things tend to change the most, during hard times. And it's so often the case, it takes a big gorilla knocking at the door to create that drive for change. And this is true for people as well as organizations. We only change if the fear that we perceive right now in the present state exceeds the fear that we perceive in the future state. And as soon as that happens, it's called the burning platform view of the world of change, which is, if things are really bad for me now and I look out and say, you know what, I'll jump off this platform into the icy water because that is it. I'm perceiving that that's better than standing here on this platform. So IBM at this point, this is late 80s, early 90s, we went through a workforce reduction of about 40%, about 200,000 people. And we looked at it and said, okay, we still need to drive down costs. We can't get rid of any more people. We've cut to the bone on that side. And let's take a look at what our other expenses are. People were number one. Occupancy was the second largest expense, and that includes real estate and the technology that's embedded in real estate. So we look at that and say, what are we going to do about our real estate portfolio? We're a company that is in the technology and services business. We're not in the real estate business. We're not making any money on this thing. Why don't we take the money off the balance sheet that's buried into brick and mortar, release it so that we can take that money and put it into operations? And that's exactly what IBM did. The other thing that IBM did at this point was the company fundamentally changed how it was measuring itself. And what I mean by that is the highest level of the organization, maybe two or three levels at the very top, measured profitability as the key metric. And as you got down into the lower levels of the organization, that changed to a revenue target. So sales and marketing, layers of management, the first, second, third, and fourth tiers were basically the metric was revenue. So you had a sales quota. IBM changed that and drove profitability all the way down to the first line of management. And wow, what a change that had for the company. All of a sudden, managers looked at this and said, wait a minute, real estate's not free. It used to be free. I had a budget. People told me I have 300 people. I had an allocated cost of about $65 per person. Each person consumes 250 square feet of space. That's my allocation. I could do nothing about it. They changed that and said, wait a minute, you're going to be measured on profit. And you can make that profit by either selling more computers, or you can make that profit by reducing your expenses, your choice.
So how did they go about implementing this?
So what IBM did is we created this initiative called the Mobility Project Office. I was a principal in IBM's newly formed IBM Consulting Group, and we put an initiative together. It was cross-functional, IT, HR, real estate, lines of business, legal, telephony. We looked at all the aspects. We went outside and studied trends. We were going through something called TQM, Total Quality Management, at that point. And one of the tenets of TQM is steal shamelessly. Go out, find out what other people are doing well, and apply it to your own organization. And so that's what we did. And when we did that, we started looking at best practices, and we found out that there was this office operation business practice called hoteling, which is breaking, and again, another key metric. Most companies run at a one-to-one people-to-workplace ratio. Every person has at least one desk assigned to them, and some people actually have more than one assigned. IBM broke that bond and said, no, you're allowed to use whatever infrastructure we have, but you use it for the time that you need it, and when you leave, somebody else has the ability to use that space. And they did that pervasively across the organization. When they did that, they said, oh my gosh, we're going to need to have some sort of technology to manage access to space. And so my team built a product that was called FlexiMove that was used to manage that space for IBM's people in their offices.
So give me the benchmarks. What were the accomplishments of this particular program?
So the result of this breaking that one-to-one people-to-desk ratio resulted in IBM cutting its real estate footprint by hundreds of millions of dollars. In 1 5-year period, they counted up $2.5 billion worth of real estate cost reduction. And I really believe that those are very low estimates. I don't think they wanted to know, the market to know, how much they actually cut out of their real estate portfolio. And so there's this people-to-desk ratio, right, of 1-to-1. When we started at hoteling, we did a 2-to-1 worker-to-workplace ratio, basically cutting real estate by 50%, and we thought that that was tremendously aggressive. I've been told now that IBM, for 30% of its workforce, is at a 15-to-1 people-to-workplace ratio. That means for 1,500 people, you only need 100 desks.
And what was the impact of that on the rest of the industry, if any?
One of IBM's competitors is learning the very hard way that if one entity in a industry cuts its costs by billions of dollars, everybody else has to follow. They have no choice. So one of IBM's big competitors is actually in that situation right now. This competitor just recently had a new CEO a couple years ago, and I believe when this gentleman walked into his company, I think he almost went apoplectic when he looked at the infrastructure costs that were being paid, and he came from an entity that had done hoteling, and when he looked at this, he said, oh my gosh, we are so far behind IBM, we have to do something about it. So, he is now on a path to reduce that real estate infrastructure dramatically. And let's use this little metric that I've been talking about, revenue per square foot. IBM's revenue per square foot, if you look at their financials, and this is just it's all publicly available information, is about, in my calculations, about $4,000 per square foot, $4,000 of revenue per square foot. Their competitors are somewhere around $1,400 per square foot, almost a factor of four less. And when you translate that into bottom line, you're talking billions of dollars in profit, cash, market capitalization, all those metrics that corporate America lives by are dramatically affected when you make this break, this people-to-workplace ratio of 1-to-1. When you make that break, it opens up a huge opportunity for cost savings and to increase and help increase the mobility and productivity of their people.
Well, John, I wanted to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
To listen to more Alter Group podcasts or to read our Alter Now blog, visit www.altergroup.com.